North Idaho Now. This is episode 40. That's the big 4-0, Madison. Chance Watson and Madison Hardy bringing you the news today. And this episode is brought to you by Hecla Mining Company. Hecla Mining Company is a leading low-cost silver producer with operating mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, and is a growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They are the largest primary silver producer in the U.S., responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit HeclaMining.com. Hi, Madison.
Hi, Chance.
How are you this beautiful Coeur d'Alene Friday?
You know, I'm pretty excited because I am finally doing it.
Have you been to a Coeur d'Alene before?
Going to the Silver Valley.
You are.
I'm so excited.
I'm very excited to have you over there. It's going to be a field trip, basically.
I'm so excited. My father loves going to Wallace. He has gone multiple times. Actually, during UIdaho Bound, he left me because I was staying in one of the housing areas at University of Idaho during UIdaho Bound.
How long has he been going to Wallace?
Oh, I think since his friend moved up here to Coeur d'Alene and his friend showed him. But I remember that weekend he left me there, just stranded. He went to Wallace. It was his buddy, and they had, like, a great weekend together, and then he came back, and, of course, I was a vandal, but a very reluctant vandal at the time.
No, vandals are the best. If you have to choose an Idaho school, you go vandals.
Absolutely.
If there's any Boise State graduates listening to this podcast, I am truly sorry that you made a poor decision.
I just frankly think that, I mean, to be honest with you, now that I'm older and that I'm out of college, I think each college has its thing that you go to it for.
Oh, sure.
You know,
oh, sure.
Like, yeah. If I was in the medical sciences, I would probably not go.
That's the whole point of a college rivalry. You hype up the positives of your school and you downplay the negatives. And, I mean, yes, Boise has a lot of... Whether it be, I mean, first off, just what there is to do, like Boise compared to Moscow. Moscow has its highlights. There's positives. But, I mean, what to do, and it's not even close.
It's just different.
Yeah,
I think it's the idea of going to school in a smaller town or going to school in a city that just happens to have a college.
There's more outdoor opportunities down in Boise, I would say. If you're a nightlife person, there's more nightlife down there.
I think it just also gives you the opportunity to kind of go to college, but not go to college. Yeah. There's a lot more non-traditional students, I feel, that go there because you can go there and basically have nothing to do with that college. Mm-hmm. I feel at the University of Idaho, there's a lot of that vandal pride because you are so entrenched in what's happening at the college. Mm-hmm. You know, you're walking around it every single day. I was in Greek life personally.
You feel like you're part of Moscow. Yeah. Whereas Boise, you're just another person.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I walked on the same cobblestones that I walked on all 4 years.
Yep.
And I felt very involved. Everyone knew each other. It was definitely a vandal family. I worked as a fundraiser for the University of Idaho. So it was very vandal pride that I don't know a lot of places have.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even I played club hockey for the school, and to this day, you know, when we have plans, when you run into some of the old guys, you wear your vandal hockey shirt, and you still, I mean, we plan on wearing our jerseys every once in a while, and it's something that you look on fondly, for sure.
Absolutely. And tailgates, I remember meeting so many parents of students who they're fifth generation vandals, and I think that's really cool as a person who never stays anywhere long enough to have a generation type
That's cool. Well, there's going to be plenty of vandals at both the big weekend events. Apologies if there's anything going on in Sandpoint. I haven't heard anything. But I know that here in Coeur d'Alene, there's Coeur d'Alene going on literally right now as we record this podcast.
Yeah, and it's Father's Day weekend.
It is Father's Day weekend,
and
also, yeah.
Harrison is having their Pig in the Park event.
That's right. That's right. I remember that now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just remember going through our headlines and Sandpoint didn't say that they were doing anything this weekend. They do have that great Sandpoint Festival, though, that is coming up. But no, Coeur d'Alene's going on right now. For car people, congrats. I know
car
this.
People?
Well, I'm not a car person, A. And B, I grew up here. So, you know, like for someone who's not from an area, something that is new is exciting. But I'm from here, so Coeur d'Alene's just kind of like a huge inconvenience if you have to drive anywhere around downtown Coeur d'Alene.
You know, I am so excited that we're having these events, though. I remember...
Oh, it's fun, though. It is a blast. I always... I mean, it seems like I'm always down here every year for it anyway, so...
Yeah, I know that Devin Weeks, who is our resident local, you know, she lives and breathes this area.
She does.
She always, I was telling her that I was very excited to experience July 4th here in Coeur d'Alene.
That'll be fun.
And she said, yep, I probably won't leave the house on July 4th. I don't want to deal with it. And you know what? I'm going to.
Because we've done it. We've been there. We've done that.
Well, I also live downtown, so I can walk. I don't have to worry about that.
Oh, so you're going to watch the fireworks downtown Coeur d'Alene?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You should experience it. Yeah. I've seen it. You, once you experience that, then it's kind of like a North Idaho thing. You go experience all the other fireworks shows. Mm-hmm. Like Bayview's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm excited to.
Harrison's kind of is. Around. I went. There was like a good 4 or 5 year stretch where I went to Harrison's.
I love Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
Harrison has a special place in my heart.
It's a cool little town. But also down I-90 in Wallace is Gyro Days.
Yes.
And I had to explain to you what that was. Essentially, what they do is they take this giant beach ball. And they throw it in the Coeur d'Alene River, and everybody tailgates next to it and follows it down the river as it makes its way from Mullen to Wallace. And they time how long it takes to get from point A to point B, and you can buy like a randomly generated time that'll – and if your time is close enough for how long it takes, you win like a bunch of silver. It's a really cool thing. Not to mention it's in Wallace, there's a giant carnival. They shut down Cedar Street. Six and Cedar, I believe, somewhere in that area. And it's a good time. It's a good time. I'm going to be covering it for Shoshone, and then I'll also be working a little bit. Might be celebrity bartending in a place. So
he called himself a celebrity.
That's just the term that you use when you're a guest bartender. I guess I could just say guest bartender.
Oh, sometimes this is the first. Swear.
Is this the first time that you've been out to the valley?
Yes. I'm so excited.
Wow. That's great. I mean, well, okay. I guess I can't say that. I grew up in Post Falls, and I really didn't spend much time in the valley either until I got my job out there. But.
I'm literally so excited. I have not been this excited.
What do you want to see? What do you want to do?
Honestly,
are you looking forward to?
I just want to see everything.
Everything?
I want to see everything.
Like the whole valley?
But like, you know, I just want to walk around. I want to see it. I have literally no idea. I have no concept of what Wallace even looks like. I have never
even driven
past.
Oh, it's going to blow you away.
Because it's the way that you would drive to Harrison, correct? Uh-huh. See, I have never driven past that.
Oh, you never driven past Rose Lake?
No.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. You're going to see a lot. You'll see Idaho's oldest building, the Cataldo Mission.
Yeah.
Been there many times on field trips and covered it for stories.
I'm so excited.
Kellogg, the biggest gondolier in the world. It's cool. For a first time person, there's definitely a lot to see and do out of the valley for sure.
Well, exactly. That's kind of my thing. You know, it's new, and one of my best friends lives there.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out Kendra. And I'm just excited.
It'll be fun. All right. Well, if I might be a good tour guide out there too. So maybe we'll. We'll have to update everybody next week on your experience in the Silver Valley.
I'm sure it's going
to
be amazing.
Oh, you'll have to see the news press office.
Exactly.
Absolutely. We have to do that. Okay. Let's move into our headlines that we have, starting with Coeur d'Alene Post Falls Press, for what would that be, Wednesday, June 16th?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Before we get into that... Gyro Days is going on now at the center of the universe, and the Brooks Hotel Restaurant and Lounge is ready to keep you fed and entertained. After working up an appetite on the carnival rides, come into the Brooks Restaurant for breakfast or lunch, served from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. Come hear local musician Paul Ward in the Brooks Lounge from 5 to 7 p.m. on Saturday while enjoying a cold drink from the bar. Mad Bomber Brewing also will also be on hand to pour their delicious Booby Trap Blonde Ale. Located at 500 Cedar Street in Wallace, right next to all the Gyro Days fun, the Brooks Hotel Restaurant Lounge is excited to see you.
I am excited to see it.
I wonder who's pouring that Mad Bomber beer.
Probably some weird kid.
Probably. Somebody who constantly tries to bring himself up in the show.
I don't know why you said tries. You do.
That's true. That's very accurate. All right. Wednesday, June 16th headlines coming from the Coeur d'Alene Press. This is a multi-byline story. We don't really have this often, but this story was definitely a team effort that everybody from both the Coeur d'Alene Press and the Shoshone News Press, not Josh. Josh was on vacation. He doesn't get any credit. But
ladies and gentlemen, Chance is inserting himself into the conversation.
So this story was written by Chance Watson, Bill Bewley, and Kay Thornbrew. Quote, I've never seen anything like it, like that in the 20 years as a police. Oh, I guess I should read the headline, huh? 85 abandoned dogs rescued from Kellogg Hoarders Home. It's Friday and we're just cruising through this, Madison. We got this. 85 abandoned dogs rescued from Kellogg Hoarders Home. So that's positive right off the bat. Quote, I've never seen anything like that in 20 years as a police officer. Kellogg Police Sergeant Paul Twite was short of words when he recounted the events of June 14th, when he played a role in rescuing 85 abandoned dogs and 9 cats from a hoarder's home in Kellogg. The rescue has become Kootenai Humane Society's largest ever batch of dogs received at one time. Based on previous recorded incident with the Kootenai Animal Control and a pending request for charges by the Kellogg Police Department to the Shoshone County Prosecutor's Office, the Hanganon News Network has identified Jamie Settlemyer as the suspected hoarder responsible for the abandonment. While Settlemyer's whereabouts were unknown as of Thursday, Twite said KPD will be requesting animal cruelty charges be filed against her. Unconfirmed reports suggest that Settlemyer and another individual may have left the area Sunday. According to a Kootenai County Animal Control Incident Report from June 2016, Settlemyer had a run-in with officials for a similar situation when she previously lived in Hayden. The incident, in which no criminal charges were filed, involved an animal control taking dozens of dogs, of the same breed as the incident in Kellogg, and an unknown number of cats from her home, putting them out for adoption. Sergeant Twite said the dogs in the most recent incident were discovered on Monday when the landlord of a home at 418 West Mullen Avenue, along with the Kellogg Animal Control Officer Sherry Morgan, went to the property to do a walkthrough following multiple notices to the tenant. The night before, the landlord was notified via text message from the phone of the tenant, but not from the tenant themselves, that there were multiple dogs living in the residence and they needed help. Upon entering, Twite and Morgan discovered a thoroughly soiled home along with abandoned dogs and cats, but no tenant. Following discovery, Twite and Shoshone Pet Rescue President Marsha Biotti assisted in processing the animals. Quote, they're all pretty much the same breed, so they have a problem. They have probably kept them there for quite a while, Twite said. It's a pretty classic case of hoarding. To the surprise of responders, most of the dogs showed that they were well-fed and even had their nails clipped. While it was apparent that the dogs had had their run of the home, Twite suspects that they were mostly kept downstairs, as neighbors told KPD that they had no idea that the home's occupant had even a single animal.
That's the weirdest thing for me. That was the weirdest thing for me. That there are all these small dogs, love dogs.
Yippy dogs. Yippy.
Exactly. I was like, oh my gosh, a chihuahua quiet.
Yeah, so later in the talk about it was corgis, chihuahuas, and mixes of and others. So yeah, like little yippy dogs running around. Yorkies too. Yeah, Yorkies, terriers, chihuahuas, and other mixes. Yeah. Of the original 85 dogs that were discovered, 83 ended up surviving, as one was already dead and another had to be euthanized later on. That was due to a fight amongst the dogs when they were transporting them. While the home showed obvious signs of many animals having lived there for an extended time, it was apparent that an attempt had been made to clean the home prior to the walkthrough on Monday. Over the course of 7 to 8 hours in coordination with the Kootenai Humane Society, Morgan volunteered her private truck and horse trailer to transport the dogs over to Coeur d'Alene in crates. Of the original 85 dogs that were discovered, 83 survived, as one was already dead and another had to be euthanized. Dog breeds included Yorkies, Terriers, Chihuahuas, and other mixes. Debbie Jeffrey, Kootenai Humane Society Executive Director, shook her head in disbelief as she took a brief break Tuesday from helping with the new arrivals. She said it was by far the most dogs KHS had rescued from a single case. Quote, I've never seen anything this bad, she said. KHS staff spent Monday night handling each dog to detail their age, sex, and condition. 4 were pregnant, 33 were male. Quote, we really didn't have any trouble with any of them, Jeffrey said. That's not common when you have this many dogs in a hoarding situation. She said a Thompson Falls, Montana shelter would take 15 of the dogs. But that's still, we're still figuring out if that had happened. Quote, they still leaves with quite a few to take care of. Hundreds of people have since rushed to adopt the dogs, and KHS Development Director Vicki Nelson said Wednesday that they received 250 online adoption applications specifically for the dogs. So many, KHS finally removed the form from its website. She said they also received many phone calls from people offering to deliver dog food, but KHS is well stocked in this area. Of the 83 dogs that survived the ordeal, 68 were shipped to KHS and are doing well, Nelson said. They were let outside for the first time and spent Wednesday morning enjoying the sun. While adoptions are wonderful and the dogs are generally healthy, Nelson did add that the dogs are not housebroken, so those planning to adopt one should be prepared for that. Biotti played a key role, who played a key role in getting the 68 dogs to KHS, said that Shoshone Pet Rescue is currently caring for 13 of the dogs, and another two were adopted on scene Tuesday. The nine cats were rescued from the Kellogg home, were taken in by the Silver Valley Cat Wranglers. Quote, I've been doing this for 15 years, and I've never seen anything like it, Biotti said. It was the biggest hoarding situation we have dealt with. It's mind-boggling. As of Thursday, both KHS and SPR are no longer taking adoption applications for the dogs, as homes for all of them have been lined up, but they are still in need of financial donations to cover the cost of medical treatment. Donations will help cover the cost of spaying and neutering procedures, vaccines, and replacing broken equipment. Kootenai Humane Society is located at 11650 North Ramsey Road in Hayden. They can be reached at 208-772-4019, and for Shoshone Pet Rescue, checks can be mailed to P.O. Box 884, Kellogg, at 83837.
What a crazy story.
What a crazy story indeed. Exclusive just for NIN. I have been told that Miss Settlemyer has been contacted by law enforcement and actually spoke with them as of today. So we will see if charges are moving forward on that. We'll probably have an update on that probably next week in next episode. Yeah, so not done yet, but thankfully it seems like all the animals are good spirits. And boy, talk about the generosity of the people here in North Idaho. Definitely the adoption requests have outnumbered by more than double the number of dogs. So
I just think that's crazy. You know, it's one of those stories that you almost can't believe. I have so many questions.
How could you live in a house with 85 dogs? How could you never let them outside? Because the fact that the neighbors did not know that she had dogs.
Yeah, that was my big one. I was trying to rationalize it in my head while I was talking to my friend last night that, you know, if they're all the same breed, maybe if a couple of them went out of time, neighbors
wouldn't
notice. But that's the thing. Like, if they weren't going outside.
Mm-mm. It's not that they thought they had pregnant. One dog. Yeah.
There's so many. How does one obtain that many dogs?
Oh, they're all. She wasn't like taking them from places. They were inbreeding. Yeah, so that there's another element of that as well. Rough stuff, Madison.
It makes me really nervous.
Nervous?
Like, people like that exist. You know, people like it's. You know, my neighbor before they moved out of this apartment, I saw inside their house and they were hoarders. They had lots of boxes. They could barely get through their front entryway. That's fine. You know, I understand that as kind of a normal hoarding situation. Having that many dogs and cats.
No, how can you stand the smell?
I'm more thinking just like, you know, how do you continue to keep moving forward in your life when you have to step over 80 dogs?
Right. I mean, there's so many elements of that that's just mind-boggling. I think she put it best, yeah. Okay, well, we will definitely have an update on that moving forward if and when charges are pressed against Ms. Settlemyer.
Yes. On to the next, Mr. Sanford's Opus. This one is by Devin Weeks. Drumming could be heard in the distance as Lake City High School principal Deanne Clifford called Tim Sanford up to be recognized. Before there was anything to say, his students had something to play. A high-energy marching band iteration of Louie Louie. I was very, very touched, Sanford said. That took a lot of work and dedication. Those dedicated students met in secret to rehearse the final number to send off their beloved band instructor the right way when he was honored during an end-of-year retiree and recognition ceremony Tuesday morning in the school's cafeteria. The legendary Sanford is retiring after nearly 40 years as a music educator. In that time, he's worked at 3 high schools, 2 middle schools, and 1 elementary school under 8 principals and 10 superintendents. He's also been a chief negotiator for and vice president of the Coeur d'Alene Education Association. All along, he's led thousands of rehearsals and performances, always at 100% and more. Being a band director is a consuming 100 miles per hour job all the time, and it's a big program. After 35 years, I'm looking forward to maybe going 75 miles per hour, he said, laughing. Sanford's awards are as countless as the lives he's touched. He's been recognized again and again for his commitment to his students and once was named one of the school band and orchestra's magazine's 50 Teachers Who Make a Difference. One time, a program was named a Grammy Signature School. That was a national award, Sanford said. The true award for Sanford, however, is to see his students succeed. What I really like is when I see my own students pursuing music and going on. I've got several kids, several former students who are teachers now. He said, when you give them a direction and some focus in their life and a place they call home, that's what I really like.
Mm.
Little warm and fuzzies.
Warm and fuzzy story. Need that after the first one. All right, let's jump to Thursday, June 17th headlines. What goes up? This is by Kay Thornbrew. The bullet hole is small, but hard to miss. A black spot on the roof of a white truck directly above the seat where an 8-year-old boy usually rides. The boy's mother, who did not wish to be identified, said her husband noticed the bullet hole just before he left work on Monday morning. The .38 caliber bullet didn't fully penetrate the roof, the woman said, but appeared to have bounced or rolled off the top of the vehicle after impact. It was found next to the truck. Gunfire isn't an uncommon sound near the family's home, which sits on several acres outside Rathdrum. Quote, it's one of the things people out here enjoy, the mom said. We're used to that. But each gunshot that echoes over the prairie now reminds her of what could have happened if someone had been in the wrong place when the bullet fell. When fired into the air, bullets can return to the ground at speeds greater than 200 feet per second, according to a CDC study published in 2003. That's sufficient force to penetrate the human skull and cause serious injury or death. The incident was reported to the Kootenai County Sheriff's Office. Detective Sergeant Joe Jovic said that shooting outside city limits is generally legal, so long as it's not intended to disturb the peace. Idaho Code states that any person who handles or operates a firearm in a, quote, careless, reckless, or negligent manner that injures another person is guilty of a misdemeanor, punishable by up to 6 months in jail. If no one is hurt by a careless gunshot, Jovic said, then there is no crime. No crime occurred. He added that property damage caused by stray bullets is only criminal if done intentionally. Quote, there are bullets that will travel miles, he said. Gun owners have to know what's beyond their range just in case. As somebody who grew up here around guns, has handled them my entire life, I feel like it should go without saying that when you use firearms, don't shoot guns into the air. And when you do shoot them, you should know what the backstop is, so you know you're not shooting into anything. So I feel like common sense should just reign here in this particular case, but I guess some people need to be told.
I think what was unfortunate is that it was almost like, I know that you're allowed to kind of use your firearms under certain provisions, of course, but it seemed like this was not supposed to be an instance that caused an issue, but the awareness that it could is worrisome.
Sure. And not to mention, just for the lighter side of it, if you're firing ammo, if you're firing shots off into the air right now, you must have a lot of disposable income because ammo is not cheap.
No, and it's not so easy to find right now.
I don't know whoever's doing a mag dump or just firing wildly into the air, but man, I want whatever job you have because you must be the richest person in our area.
Oh, gosh.
What else we got, Madison?
Well, we have officials say it's time for non-residents to pay. This one is mine. More out-of-state visitors to North Idaho recreation areas has led several local and state officials to raise concerns about fairness for Idahoans. The topic was raised Tuesday night by Post Falls City Councilwoman Linda Wilhelm. She received several letters and phone calls regarding congestion at the Cumulon boat launch and parking at the city parks recently. Many of those communications, she said, asked the council to raise fees on non-Idaho users whose out-of-state license plates are taking up a, quote, great deal of available space. The Wilhelm told the press Wednesday that our city parks are paid for by city taxpayers, and I feel with the growth we are experiencing, it is time to adjust those parking fees. Cumulon Park fees for all-day parking are $5 for cars, $8 for boats, and $10 for buses. However, a season parking pass is only $15 for residents and $30 for non-resident visitors. Wilhelm isn't the only official from Kootenai County who believes out-of-state residents should be paying more for Idaho outdoor amenities. Commissioner Bill Brooks has long encouraged increasing waterways fees for outside visitors from approximately $30 to $500. He said, people who live here should pay $25, and if they are a senior citizen, it should cost nothing to register. These are our waters, these are our parks, and if out-of-state visitors want to use them, they have to pay for them. In Idaho, residents and non-residents pay a flat fee to use Gem State waters, and boaters don't have to live in the registered area to boat here. And per Idaho Parks and Recreation website, boat registration from other states are valid in Idaho for 60 consecutive days, but they must purchase a invasive species sticker, which is also a very small fine. And then Representative Doug Ukonowicz, who's a Republican from Hayden, freshman this year, took a stand to increase out-of-state user fees during the recent session, successfully passing House Bill 93. The legislation specifically doubled the cost of camping fees at five parks, Farragut, Henry's Lake, Ponderosa, Priest Lake, and Round Lake for non-residents. Under the bill, non-residents will now pay anywhere from $24 to $64 on top of the $14 to $24 Idahoans pay for a basic campsite. The bill also raised entry fees for non-residents to twice that of residents, $14 a day. The price uptick actually began on June 10th, and when I spoke to Ukonowicz earlier this year, he said, with just the five parks and additional and added other fees, we think we can pretty safely raise an additional $1.4 million annually. And the best part is, it doesn't cost Idaho taxpayers a penny.
Wow. So first off, you're getting better at saying Quellum Park. I mean, that's how the locals say it. That's not how you're. That's not the technical pronunciation. But growing up in Post Falls, everybody calls it Quellum Park. I mean, this is, to me, this is kind of a no-brainer. I feel like this has been one of the greatest resources that North Idaho has is its natural beauty and its natural resources and its recreation opportunities. I feel like when folks come out of state to use it, it only makes, I mean, we do this, I guess the best example is like hunting. Like an out-of-state hunting permit is much more expensive than an in-state one.
Mm-hmm. And even Bill Brooks, when I was talking to him about the comment, he told me that he had tried to go fishing in Montana.
Same thing.
And it was the same thing.
Yeah.
And if you go anywhere else, it does cost a little bit more money when you're not from there. It's kind of like a, you know, locals only bonus.
Sure.
And I think that Idaho has just historically.
Well, it's only fair too, because the locals pay taxes and whatnot to, you know, maintain those on a yearly basis. Whereas if you come in and use it and don't pay, then, you know, you're kind of taking advantage of that. So it's only fair. And I would expect the same if I went to Washington and recreated.
Mm-hmm. And 100%, you know, realistically, look at Idaho. What is our main resource here?
Right.
And it's our outdoors. It's our natural resources. It's all these amazing things that we benefit from so wildly.
Yep.
And people, especially in the last year, have started using them more.
Yep.
And that's fine. I don't mind you being here, but
I'm just
land. This land is our land.
I'm just kidding. Could jump on my local soapbox. I need to have like an alter ego for like the more paranoid North Idaho guy of me. He's back there.
He's angry North Idaho.
Yeah, the angry North Idaho guy. I'll tell you what. I just throw him out there from time to time.
What?
95% of the time I'm like, everybody, as long as they just pay their fair way, you know, it's good. We can
peace,
all share this.
Love, unity, right. Respect.
And that 5% is like, get out of my Idaho. Okay. Moving on to Friday, June 18th. Memorial ceremony highlights trooper sacrifice. This is by Bill Bewley. Lots of B's in there. Alliteration. One by one, law enforcement officers placed roses at the memorial for Idaho State Police Trooper Linda Huff. Then each stood straight, paused, and saluted. The line stretched back into the ISP Region 1 parking lot on a hot Thursday afternoon. No one minded the wait or the heat. It was clear. They remember Huff's sacrifice. This was the least they could do, and they miss her. Quote, she was taken from us by a nameless coward who laid in wait to ambush her outside of our former ISP office, said ISP Sergeant Ron Sutton. About 200 people, many veterans, attended the 30-minute ceremony to honor Huff. While it's been 23 years since Huff was shot and killed on June 17, 1998, Sutton said, quote, it still feels like yesterday to many of us. Sutton was a rookie trooper, 22, when he met Huff. He remembers her as a kind woman with a big smile. Her death, Sutton said, quote, holds a brutal reminder of the danger that each of us accept each and every day when we put on the badge. Despite being shot multiple times late at night in the ISP District 1 headquarters parking lot after returning from patrol, Huff returned fire, injuring the suspect. He was arrested moments later and would be found guilty of first-degree murder. He was sentenced to life in prison without parole. Huff died at the scene. At the time of her death, Huff had served with ISP for 14 months. She was survived by her husband, who was also a state trooper, and three children. On May 13, 2005, Trooper Huff was posthumously awarded the first Idaho Law Enforcement and Firefighting Medal of Honor. The ISP District 1 office in Coeur d'Alene today bears her name, and visitors are greeted with a stone memorial surrounded by a rose garden. Kootenai County Sheriff Bob Norris said Huff's memory is still vivid in the hearts and minds of the community. Quote, "We will never forget forget Linda Huff or the price that she and her family paid. We stand with them as the hurt continues to this day," he said. Norris called on the community to continue to support Kootenai County's law enforcement. Quote, "The flags, the stickers on the cars, the social media comments, the friendly waves, and the thank you for your service comments, they do not go unnoticed by me, my officers, or those serving," he said. Norris said he was honored to stand in thanks, quote, "to heroes like Linda Huff." Great story.
Frankly, the older that I've gotten, the more respect I've gotten for our law enforcement, especially particularly up here in North Idaho. I will say that I have never felt so much care from our law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Everyone that I've talked to has been really amazing. Of course, you know, I am a little bit biased. We do have Pat Knight from the Post Falls Police Department, who might actually be the nicest person I've ever met in my life. But, you know, I think anyone that has dedicated their life to that service with the knowingness that they can be injured at any at any moment is really respectable.
I remember when he was Captain Knight.
I can't believe he's leaving.
I know.
So sad. Moving on.
Moving on.
The good times roll again. This one is by Kay Thornbroom. One of North Idaho's most popular summer attractions has come roaring back after the COVID-19 pandemic forced it to hit the brakes last year. Coeur d'Alene begins today and continues tomorrow. Any vehicle from 1980 or older may register for the Friday cruise, the Saturday show, or both. Registration is open today at 1201 East Sherman Avenue from 8 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. and Saturday at 8th Street and Sherman Avenue from 6 to 8 a.m. Spots are limited. Before the classic car cruise tonight, the Red Hot Mamas will warm up the crowd with a rock and roll parade. At 5 p.m., the Mamas will make their way to 7th Street to 2nd Street and back again, dancing to a melody of iconic songs from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. A parade of classic cars will thunder through downtown Coeur d'Alene from 6 to 9 p.m., and spectators can get a closer look at the cars and meet their owners Saturday at the Show and Shine from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Both the Friday night cruise and Saturday show are free to all spectators. Awards will be presented Saturday at 4 p.m. at 5th Street and Sherman Avenue. Classic beauties will show off their charisma and vintage looks in a pinup contest Saturday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at 316 Sherman Avenue. The pinup contest is open to all ages. It's free to participate and attend. While viewing classic cars and taking in the atmosphere, spectators can also play a hand at the Coeur d'Alene Poker Walk from 11 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Saturday. Players can purchase their poker card at the Downtown Association booth at 316 Sherman Avenue. New this year, the Special Interest Lane features a limited number of unique vehicles that are 1981 or newer, including high-performance cars, race cars, and others. Builders aged 25 and younger will have their time to shine in the Young Builders Alley. Quote, "We want to see who's put their heart and soul into their vehicle," said volunteer James Ruff. Through the Young Builders Alley, Ruff said Coeur d'Alene seeks to give youngsters an opportunity to show off their ability and craftsmanship, regardless of the vintage of their vehicle. "I want those young builders to showcase their pride and joy next to all the rest of those cars, where they belong," he said.
Well, there you go.
I know you said you're not a car person. I'm not a huge car person or anything like that.
But I can appreciate a nice car.
I have
car,
a certain affinity to those vintage cars.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, same. Okay. I think you and I are in the same boat. I can. It's not like I see a nice classic car and go, eh, meh. No, I can appreciate that for sure. I guess maybe just I have sensitive ears, I guess. When people start getting real loud, I kind of tune out.
Yeah. I am a little thankful. I will admit that today I'm going to Wallace. I do live downtown. So
you are getting out of Dodge.
I'm getting out of the Vroom Vroom Nation for
you are.
A couple hours.
You are. And like I said, I can be impressed by the engine that does that, but man, it's like when somebody rides by like your house on a Harley Davidson and just revs it hard. Like, dude, stop.
Yeah. I mean, I can respect it for a couple seconds, but if it was going to be a couple hours
this is the event.
When I'm trying to eat dinner.
Yep.
I would probably...
This is the event to do it. You guys go right ahead. It is your thing. You do it. You do it to it.
It is vroom vroom o'clock.
Yep. Go for it. Initial successor, Total Failure. Mad Bomber Brewing Company, located at 9265 North Government Way in Hayden, Idaho, is a veteran-owned and operated business that has been serving North Idaho since 2013. Swing by the brewery for a cold booby-trap blonde, the perfect light beer to beat the summer heat. Be sure to check out their special events throughout the week, including trivia on Mondays, all-day happy hour on Tuesdays, open mic night on Wednesdays, discounted growler fills on Thursdays, and live music on Fridays and Saturdays. Mad Bomber Brewing also offers a wide selection of ciders from North Idaho Cider for those who may not want beer. Located near Triple Play, come by and mention the podcast when you order to receive $1 off your first beer. Mad Bomber Brewing, recklessly brewed in Hayden, Idaho. And that takes us right into Shoshone News Press headlines for Friday, June 18th. The headline was actually the story that we read to you first in the Coeur d'Alene headlines. In fact, most of the papers in our network ran that story in some way, shape, or form. So we'll skip over that one about the hoarding situation in Kellogg and jump right into the center of the page, which is headlined. I wrote this one, by the way. PES student receives $5,000 scholarship. The most recent end-of-the-year assembly at Pinehurst Elementary School was a bit more special this time around, as a certain student walked away with not only an award, but a hefty college scholarship as well. I thought this was really impressive, by the way. PES Principal Mike Groves announced on June 9th assembly that fifth grader Dallas Ross was rewarded a $5,000 Children of Warriors scholarship for an essay that he submitted to the organization. Quote, the kids had to write an essay explaining why they think they would be the best candidate for the scholarship, Grove said. The scholarship originally started several years ago to help kids of military or first responder families, but has changed into a scholarship for kids who have parents who have, quote, fought through adversity. Dallas's father, Jeremy Ross, is a deputy with the Shoshone County Sheriff's Office, and his grandfather, Scott Ross, is a reserve officer with the SCSO as well as their chaplain. No one outside of the organization knew the winner until the day before the assembly. Unknown to the scholarship committee who chose the winner, Dallas would also be recognized at the assembly as one of the students to receive a Presidential Academic Excellence Award due to his ISAT scores. Quote, I'm glad I didn't have to make the selection because there were so many qualified kids that applied, Grove said. Dallas is a well-behaved kid who works hard and is very conscientious about his schoolwork. The Pinehurst Elementary School end-of-year assembly is a culmination of the monthly award ceremonies that are held every month of the school year to recognize students who have gone above and beyond. Kids who had perfect attendance, did something good, received a positive Panther Award, students who did not get discipline issues, or were selected as a student of the month would be recognized every month. Students that did not have discipline issues, among other things, got their name placed into a jar for the end of the year assembly where they could win prizes. This year, 60 prizes were given out. They went on to name the fifth graders that were awarded the Presidential Academic Awards, both the Academic Excellence and Academic Achievement Awards. One is for good ISAT scores, and the other one is for students that have shown promise and have worked hard to grow over the year. So, and we also, if you're interested in the names, we included all the names in the story. So you should check that out.
Always a good thing to highlight those.
I think that you know, an end of the year assembly, every school, you know, has their little prizes for all the kids. But a fifth grader getting a $5,000 college scholarship, pretty impressive. I don't even think it was an opportunity when I was that young.
I feel like there are so many things that are just new for these kids nowadays that are so many nice things.
Them. Like it is, you can legitimately get an associate's degree while you're still in high school. That wasn't even an, I was, you know, you could do AP courses, which I don't know, depending on who you talk to, I'm not a huge fan of those. And then you could do like dual credit. But back when I was there, there was no way you could take college. You could take some college courses.
Yeah. I mean, I took AP courses, but I don't think it was, I'm sure it was, I was just 16, but no one, I didn't feel like it was explained to me enough that me taking AP environmental science in chemistry and biology really didn't matter if I was going to not go into a science degree.
Correct.
And I really would not have pained myself that much.
And they're not worth any college credit.
In my situation, the classes that I took would cancel out a course.
Okay.
So, for example, I took all years of AP English courses.
Okay.
And so I basically didn't really have to do an English course.
Gotcha. Okay. So there were some benefit.
Yeah. Yeah. Small.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you convincing me or convincing
now,
you?
I probably would have just done dual enrollment courses.
Mm-hmm.
But those are things I can push on to my children.
Fair, of course. Absolutely.
I enjoy spending time on the Coeur d'Alene River, the South Fork, and Chain Lakes. I tell my grandchildren how much better the river looks since I was a kid. I also tell them how to play clean around lead and other metals still found in the soil. We bring extra water to wash up before eating. We shake off beach towels, brush off the dog, and leave shoes on the mat. Grandma likes the idea, too. To learn how generations play clean, visit the Idaho Department of Environmental Quality at www.deq.idaho.gov/playclean.
All right, let's jump north to the Bonner County Daily Bee headline, starting with Wednesday, June 16th. Madison, what we got?
We have 7 bee baggers fundraise for local family. This one's by Rachel Sun. The 7 Bee Baggers Cornhole Club has fundraised to donate $1,300 this week for a local family and their baby. The group decided to fundraise for the family after Darcy Smith, Fairgrounds and Facility Director, reached out saying an employee's baby had costly medical expenses and asking if the group might be able to help. The baby, London, was born this winter with serious medical complications that require a month-long stay in a neonatal intensive care unit. That stay, along with continuing medical needs, has put an added financial strain on his parents, Chris and Aaron Larson, said club treasurer Amelia Boyd. The club played at the Bonner County Fairgrounds to maintain social distancing during the pandemic over the last year, Boyd said. When Smith reached out, they knew they wanted to help. Boyd said she asked if we would do a fundraiser, and we thought, absolutely. It was our pleasure to do it. We feel like we're a part of the Bonner County Fairgrounds family. The check, delivered Tuesday morning following the fundraiser's tournament on June 5th, is the second major donation the club has made to the community this month. The first was a $1,000 donation from fundraising at a different tournament to the Bonner County Community Food Bank. The club is already making plans for another fundraising tournament at 6 p.m. on July 9th and 9 a.m. July 10th, with proceeds and raffle items to benefit court-appointed special advocates, which trains advocates to represent children abuse and neglect victims. The event will be the last regional tournament of the season with intermediate, advanced, and singles events, with entry fees based on levels for each event. Participants will also be able to earn points with the American Cornhole League by competing in the event. The fundraisers are a key part of what makes the group stands for, Boyd said. The group, which is registered as a 501c3 nonprofit, is composed of about 30 local players who all consider themselves a part of the community. The group will hold a cornhole event this weekend at 6 p.m. Friday and 10 a.m. Saturday at Mick Duff's Beer Hall. More information about the events is available on the 7B Baggers Cornhole Facebook page under the Events tab.
First off, shout out, since we already mentioned them, Mick Duff's Beer Hall. Kudos. It's a great place. and you can play some cornhole there. I definitely have thrown some bags in my time while partaking in a craft beer or two. So it's good that it's being done now for a good cause.
You know, I think it's cool that groups like this, I don't know if this is a North Idaho thing. I don't know if this is new in the last couple of years, but I feel like every group I've ever met or talked to or reported on does something to give back to the community. And mm-hmm. It's always just, you know, a person in need or, you know, the people coming out in droves who adopt these animals. It's the most giving environment I've ever seen. And
we look out for each other up here.
Kudos to you, North Idaho.
Yeah. Good job, guys. Good job, folks. All right. Moving to Thursday, June 17th headlines. City OK Selkirk Fire JPA CBA. This is by Rachel Sun Council members approved an updated joint powers agreement and collective bargaining agreement for the Selkirk Fire District at their meeting Wednesday night. Selkirk Fire encompasses Sandpoint, Sagal, and Westside Fire Districts. One change to the JPA, said City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton, is to renew for 3-year terms instead of one. The change was made at the recommendation of a consulting firm hired by the city and will reduce paperwork and align the schedule for the JPA with the collective bargaining agreement. Quote, before, it seemed as soon as we got moved through a year and kind of had everything all sorted out, then we were to the point where we needed to redo the JPA. So administratively, this will be easier for us all. Stapleton said. The consultants had done an analysis last year after the GPA ran out, which concluded the GPA had benefits to the residents of Sandpoint, Sagal, and the Westside Fire District areas, and had cost-saving benefits when administered appropriately because of the shared administrative work across the three fire districts. Another change was eliminating the battalion chief position at the recommendation of the city consultant. The updated JPA will also change the way the organization is structured, Stapleton said. With a smaller JPA, board consisting of one representative from each of the three fire districts and an executive director, which is designed as the role of the city administrator. The JPA also allows for a fire district to have an alternate in the case of their primary representative is unable to attend. That change consolidates the administration, Stapleton said. Previously, the fire chief would have to report to the three boards, whereas now they only have one. Quote, there's a JPA board, there's two district boards, and then under our traditional structure, our department heads report to my position and the mayor. So we had a lot of cooks in the kitchen, she said. This really consolidates it better. The city is also in the process of seeking applications for a new fire chief, as interim fire chief Dale Hopkins is also planning to retire at the end of the summer, Stapleton said. Although that night, the council members unanimously approved a bid for a city hall. Also that night, rather, the city council members unanimously approved a bid for a city hall customer service remodel project for $824,000. The remodel will include structural improvements for building integrity and replacement of the HVAC system. City Hall, which is actually two buildings, encompasses council's chambers on the south end and a customer service on the north, which is where the remodel will take place. Aside from convenience for the public, Stapleton said bringing all the customer service groups together will allow for better cross-training. The first floor will also have two conference meeting rooms added.
Wow.
As somebody who's covered some fire district stuff out in Shoshone, I know this stuff can be complicated. And at the end of the day, in my experience, most people don't necessarily care about the particulars. They just care about if they call 911 because there's a medical emergency or their house is on fire, they just hope somebody comes. So hopefully this works out for the better and helps with response times and administration stuff and overall improving the quality of service.
Yeah, I know a lot of law enforcement is really struggling right now. They're either tight staffed or growth is just too much. So anything that can be done to help our law enforcement.
I'll have to – one day I'll point it out to you. There's a – you know, do you know downtown Post Falls well?
Yes.
Okay. There's a very small building. I believe it's the museum now, like in the – in front of City Hall, downtown Post Falls. Do you picture it in your head?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that used to be the – police station. That tiny little building across from like the dry cleaners in City Hall. Yeah.
Wow, that is crazy.
I was young enough to remember it.
All right, going to Friday?
Yes, moving on to Friday. What do we got?
LPOSD. Focus on academic growth and mental health. This one is by Rachel Sun. After a year of pandemic-related challenges, Lake Pend'Oreille School District staff are working to make up for lost time in the 2021-2022 school year. Numerous changes, including an at-home learning, shortened school days, and increased anxiety and depression among students have hampered growth over the past year, educators say. Although LPOSD students still exceeded the state average in academic growth, staff are still working to be prepared for the reset in the fall, said Superintendent Tom Albertson. One of the biggest challenges educators face for the upcoming school year is that the enrollment for fall classes and the achievement levels of students who did not attend in person are still unknown. Many students who spent the past year at home with varying degrees of academic engagement will be coming back to school. That could mean a major discrepancy in readiness between students in the same grade, Albertson said. The schools are also facing learning loss even among students who are able to attend classes in person. One area where multiple schools reported higher rates of learning loss was in math. There are different hypotheses that have been suggested as to why that is. Among them, parents struggle to teach the curriculum and the specific structures the curriculum follow. Regardless of the reason, the district is implementing a variety of tools, including a math leadership team to focus on instructional strategies and professional learning communities to bridge the gap, said Andrew Murray, Director of Teaching and Learning for LPOSD. In addition to the challenges of at-home learning, more students have been dealing with emotional disengagement and an increase in mental health problems, Albertson said. Every year, the Idaho State Department of Education conducts a student engagement survey measuring behavioral, cognitive, and emotional student engagement. in LPOSD, students remained on par with previous years for cognitive and behavioral engagement, he said. However, students reported lower levels of emotional engagement, particularly among secondary level students. In many cases, remote learning contributed to that disengagement, said Tavi Brandenburg, Sandpoint High School counselor. This affected both students in hybrid schedules and those at home full-time through homeschooling or the Idaho Digital Learning Academy. Brandenburg said, I think it's an out-of-sight, out-of-mind type of scenario. You know, when students had to go remote last spring, students and teachers were really struggling with how do we stay connected. For the day-to-day mental care, health cares, SHS and LPOSD system as a whole focuses heavily on sources of strength and similar programs that frame mental health care and suicide prevention through peer and mentor connections. This year, SHS staff will also be learning about trauma-informed teaching practices. Counselors Shannon Kerrigan and Sarah Gosling will be following up with that training with a book study for teachers funded by a Panhandle Alliance for Education grant. Those efforts extend to younger students as well, said Carrie Grainer, incoming SMS principal. Teaching staff are looking for ways to incorporate conversations about mental health into relevant curriculum in a way that feels authentic. One other element schools are trying to use and engage students in is reintroducing and adding electives that students can get excited about, Greener said. Programs like woodworking and Steamworks, jazz band, competitive math club, books club, and other unique classes and extracurricular activities serve to give students more ideas for their post-secondary plans and get them excited for school. Although the next year presents challenges on an academic and social-emotional level, many students are also excited to return to full-time school, said Jessica Lippi, SMS counselor. She said, they're bringing back those things like our pride assemblies that our students just love. They look forward to them. They get excited about them. So it just makes my heart happy to know that we're going to be able to do those things again. You know, I completely know where they're coming from. When you have a really hard year, it does take a lot out of you. I remember my senior year graduating from high school, we had three people pass away and then another teacher.
Wow.
And we also had the first time someone had tried to jump off a building at school. Oh. And I remember all those things happened, you know, within 8 months. And it was really hard for our school as a whole to really band together and look at the bright side, especially going into a year when it's always, you know, I think people think of high school graduation as this huge, amazing time, but there's a lot of things behind the scenes, you know, people trying to figure out where to school, go to school, expenses and financial, leaving the family. It's a very intense year.
Made all those things really hard.
It does. And I know that these kids are probably feeling the exact same way. And by, I think what Jessica Libby said, that bringing back those things like pride assemblies and getting all the kids together, it will have a huge impact. And it really impressed me to see what the school district is doing. I think that it's awesome. You know, being in North Idaho and being smaller schools, you don't have the same opportunities.
Nope.
And seeing this heart is really inspiring.
Yep, I agree. All right, jumping even further north to the Bonners Ferry Herald headlines. These are coming from Thursday, June 17th edition. Late spring storm leaves its mark. This is by Victor Corral Martinez. North Idaho braced for a strong thunderstorm on Tuesday, June 15th, that required North Bench Fire to respond to a wildland fire in the area of Chippewa Street. Initially, dispatch reported at 6 a.m. that the fire was within city limits, but as crews arrived, it was identified that the fire was outside city limits and in North Bench's jurisdiction. Multiple emergency trucks and a command vehicle responded to the fire with support from Bonners Ferry, Paradise Valley, and South Boundary Fire Departments. Crews were able to quickly contain the fire to within a tenth of an acre. The cause of the fire was found to be a lightning strike. Yeah, that happens. According to North Bench Fire Chief Gus Jackson, the crews were well prepared for the storms and the potential calls to respond even in the morning. The fire departments have dealt with fires at weird hours, but this particular call was an odd situation. North Bench was aware of the Chippewa fire before being told that the fire fell within their jurisdiction and was ready if the fire expanded outside city limits. The initial reports of the fire showed that it was small enough and manageable because the weather wasn't arid. However, the excess pine brush did require over 350 gallons of water to make sure that the fire was controlled but contained. Jackson detailed that safety is always a concern. He contacted the National Weather Service in Spokane about any potential storm cells as they contain the fires, stressing the need for proper safety measures for the crew's best interests and ability to contain the fire. The Wildland fire didn't show significant spread potential, and although a lightning strike caused the fire, it isn't the first experience that fire crews have had dealing with such incidents. On April 17th, Boundary County emergency responders participated in a multi-agency command and coordination radio exercise that helped deal with this fire, according to Jackson. The exercise was designed to evaluate the county's ability to direct, coordinate, and control a multiple agency response across multiple jurisdictions. Quote, "It was a great response by everybody," Jackson said. Glad they knocked it down quick. We're coming into wildfire season, so could have been a lot worse.
Oh, gosh, don't even mention wildfires. I can't have any more negative news today. Yeah. All right. Valley View Elementary unveils first book vending machine in North Idaho. This one is by Victor Corral Martinez, and it sounds like an awesome story.
Mm-hmm.
Valley View Elementary School unveiled its book vending machine on Tuesday, June 8th, the first in North Idaho. The idea started in September, and the idea began taking off when Principal Harmon Newhouse said he would love to have one on campus. Julie Colson, the school librarian, made plans to make it happen. Quote, "Colson would meet with me probably every week looking at different images," he said. According to Newhouse, the new book vending machine uses reading books as a reward for students if they do something outstanding in school and allow them to pick up their book. Quote, "Just reading with these kids goes far," Newhouse said. "If we can get kids to read, it does so much for their learning and their minds. This vending machine will hold up to 200 books and will be available for all students to use. The most significant benefit for the students is no money is required to use the vending machine, but it accepts a gold token. Students will have opportunities to earn gold tokens and to choose the book they want. Students may earn the tokens with positive behaviors such as kindness, respect, and being helpful." Valley View Elementary thanks Mountain West Bank's branch manager, Patty Solt, and the community reinvestment team for making this dream come true. Newhouse said, "Giving children the chance to choose their very own forever book and earn that book through positive behavior helps us build excitement for reading. When children are excited about books, only good things can happen." According to Salt, Colson presented the book vending machine concept to Mountain West Bank and Community Outreach Coordinator Rebecca Johnson. Salt said, "We just ran with it. It's a huge thing to be there for the community and help reinvest in our kids." Salt said, stating that this was an excellent opportunity for the bank to help Bonner's Ferry. Salt stated that she likes the merit program incentive for receiving a token to get a book, wishing she had a similar vending machine when she was in school. Me too. According to Salt, Newhouse and Colson, no other schools outside of Boise have a book vending machine in Idaho. I think this is probably one of the coolest things I have ever heard.
This is a really cool story. I definitely wanted to grab this for the show today because I just love the ingenuity of it. Maybe, I don't know. It just seems like such a unique thing.
No, that is so cool. And I was thinking about that, too, when I was reading the story. I was like, oh, how are they going to pay for this? And then they're like, you get a golden token. I was like, oh, this is awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's super cool. All right. Is that the show for today, Madison?
Oh, it's over?
It's over. All right. Well, let's wrap it up so we can get out of Coeur d'Alene before we're stuck in traffic, right? Once again, we'd like to thank Hecla Mining Company for sponsoring this episode. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit heclamining.com. All right, everybody, thanks again for listening in. We really appreciate it. Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff on social media. If you're interested in the stories that we talked about today or the ones we did not, check us out at www.coeurdalenepress.com, shoshonenewspress.com, bonnercountydailybee.com, or the bonnersferryherald.com. Whatever podcatcher that you listen in on, please subscribe and follow us so you can get every episode as soon as it comes out. And please leave a nice review. That gets us seen everywhere.
Please.
And our advertisers, when you go out, if you go out and see them, mention us. Let them know, because that's just a win for everyone. You'll get cheaper stuff. They think that the ad works. And
also, thank you to all of our advertisers. We really do.
Yes, we absolutely do thank
you.
I've gotten
to meet many of you recently, and it fills my heart up with so much joy, like knowing that you guys are so excited about this because we love this. I mean, sometimes I get annoyed with Chance, but I like you guys, and so that's what matters.
And you guys are obviously getting something out of it; otherwise, you wouldn't keep advertising. So, I'm glad that that's helping you out too. All right, everybody, thanks again, and we'll see you next week.